Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Moving fast and furious right after President's Day. We have a lot on tap today. Sad news about Jesse Jackson passing away at 84 years old. We did hear about he was declining rapidly with a rare disease. He made a huge impact when he ran for president. He definitely paved the way for Barack Obama in many ways. He wasn't perfect. Neither am I. Neither are you. But he is an impactful person in history, especially you always see him squatting down next to the slain Martin Luther King Jr. when he was shot to death in that balcony. Also, we're definitely going to stay on top of Nanthri Guthrie. We know about the DNA. Hopefully, we'll have a match with that on the glove. Hopefully, it matches what they found or didn't find. They're very cagey about this inside the house of the Guthrie house, as the family has been eliminated as any targets. And then they add, they've always been eliminated. Days afterwards, we eliminated them. Why this sheriff is still handling communications and still taking the lead, I don't know. He's also complaining about he wants things to get back to normal and this could take years. What a clown. I think that's what's going to be written about this personally. But meanwhile, let's focus on the mission. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
There's a simple answer to this. Republicans, go along with these common sense proposals and we'll fund the whole DHS bill, the whole Department of Homeland Security bill. Just go along. Again, I cannot repeat enough.
He's such the minority leader who wants to be the majority leader, and there's a long shot of that happening, but he also does want to get ousted by his own party, so he's being obstinate. That's my view. DHS showdown, shutdown continues as TSA paychecks are about 2 weeks away from delay, as well as FEMA, but they got to work anyway because they're essential services. Meanwhile, we're going to be forced to suck it up because the Dems want to play tough guy and they want to demean ICE. And I think we're going to talk about it in a negotiation. It would help if the lawmakers were actually in town.
Number two.
Iran ultimately is governed, and its decisions are governed by Shia clerics, radical Shia clerics. So it's hard to do a deal with Iran. We've always said it's hard, but we're going to try.
Iran, talks resume, and the stakes have never been higher. And why any deal that they might be striking is just a deal with a terrorist cult and should not be taken seriously. And I believe President Trump understands that.
Number one.
So when you run for president, are you going to impose a wealth tax?
I don't think that anyone, and that we don't have to wait for any one president to impose a wealth tax. I think that it needs to be done expeditiously.
That 36-year-old economic genius and foreign policy novice, midterms front and center, and 28 is heating up, believe it or not, even though not through 26. We're going to look at the long line on the left stacking up to be the next nominee and who is exposed on the international stage over the weekend. Let's talk about that. First off, who shined? Secretary of State Marco Rubio is a fantastic speaker. I mean, that's why they were talking about him as a rising star, as when he was a lawmaker in Florida, as a state lawmaker. That's why they said he was a natural as a senator, and that's why he ran for president, even though Jeb Bush was still angry, and I don't think they're speaking, and he felt as though he mentored Marco Rubio for a while. I never doubted his talent. and his knowledge of foreign policy, just because pure studying and appearing and going to conferences like the Munich Conference has yielded big results, as well as his expertise in Central and South America. And President Trump recognized that. He said when he was, I think he was chairman of foreign relations, I guess he was, and even though Trump and he had such a bitter primary battle, the minute he lost, he was in. Okay, I lost. All right. Not continuing to snipe on the sideline. Ted Cruz had trouble getting over it. No question. Ron DeSantis, for example, turned the page. They golfed last weekend. You go at it hard and you say, okay, I didn't win, you know, and that's it. But man, on the foreign policy stage, a year after the vice president went up there and shocked Europe by basically saying you guys have been left behind, you're economically behind the eight ball, you're not contributing, and militarily we can't carry the load forever. They were shocked by that. So in comes the good cop. But I think he was the practical cop too. Cut one.
We want allies who are proud of their culture and of their heritage, who understand that we are heirs to the same great and noble civilization, and who together with us are willing and able to defend it. And this is why we do not want allies to rationalize the broken status quo rather than reckon with what is necessary to fix it. For we in America have no interest in being polite and orderly caretakers of the West's managed decline. We do not seek to separate, but to revitalize an old friendship and renew the greatest civilization in human history.
And they talked about the commonalities between our ancestors and there. The way we go right back to Europe. Of course, we are Australians and Central America and South America. They're great. You know, Canadians. I understand it. But predominantly, we come from there. The ideas come from there. The founding fathers came from there. They studied over there. Almost all of them except Washington, and his brothers did. He was unable to. Because his dad died young, he had to stay home and work the land. But he got the same concept. He understands it. He understood it. And he got his leadership there. And he got the mentorship from his brothers, who were also studied over in England. So he understood that. I just want to point out, there's another story in the New York Times today saying Marco Rubio is tapping into a Europe that doesn't exist anymore because they've taken in so many Muslims and so many people from other continents. It is still majority Judeo-Christian beliefs steeped in a rich history, one that we study from day one, that is very much a part of our social studies historical curriculum. Why the New York Times has to find a way to put down an eloquent, well-received speech that resulted in a standing ovation is beyond me. And I think what's happening now is Trump came in and he said this stuff and it was shocking. It was shocking to me and I knew him. And the more you think about it and you see what he's doing, he's pushing and prodding. And NATO's General Secretary, Rutte, as well as Stoltenberg, understand what he's doing. Maybe they wouldn't do it this way, but they understand that Trump is making this alliance stronger. And it's like the commissioner in football. He's put there by the owners. Those general secretaries put there by the members. So how tough can you be on the members that gave you the job? But you could be tough if the most important member is being tough on the fellow members. You can go, yeah, this guy's totally right. Yeah, maybe. I don't think Trump ever should have said that I'm not sure NATO would have our back, because they did. 53 Italians lost their lives. Over 200 Brits lost their lives. We heard how hard the Canadians fought, the Australians fought. So the Trump came out and put something on Truth Social kind of amending that. But what he is trying to do is trying to say, get your act together. Economically, you can't do this social, you can't do this social program. You can't afford it. And the only reason you're sustaining it is because you don't spend any money in the military. Reconfigure. And I'm giving you the reason. I'm telling you that we're not watching your back. So you tell your people that if you're going to put me in office, the next leader and the current leader, I got to do, because America says they're not going to keep watching our back for free, providing the missiles, providing the hardware, being the overseer, letting people know you attack France, you're going to get the weight of the world's best superpower and the finest military. So here's more from Rubio. Cut two.
Together, we can reindustrialize our economies and rebuild our capacity to defend our people. But the work of this new alliance should not be focused just on military cooperation and reclaiming the industries of the past. It should also be focused on together advancing our mutual interests in new frontiers,
unshackling our ingenuity, our creativity, and the dynamic spirit to build a new Western century.
And you know what he's doing? And I'll just repeat it again because I think it's worth saying. If you're Maloney, if you're Starmer, now you have to turn around and say, I have to put more money into our military. The U.S. and NATO is demanding it. It's not a choice. It's not like, well, you know, I got to deny these social programs. I can't keep propping up my bad medical health care programs. I can't continue to subsidize all these industries. I can't continue to allow colleges to have rates this high. I have to find a way to get the military budget to double because we have to worry about security. And then you tell your voters that, and the next prime minister of any party will have to do that. It all works, and I think they're getting it, because no leader wants to take over a weak country and leave it weak militarily. It's just fundamentally not what anyone's about. Usually, I'm not saying for all, I'd say 97%. But then Rubio went back, instead of saying, do this, he said, remember this, cut four.
America was founded 250 years ago, but the roots began here on this continent long before. The man who settled and built the nation of my birth arrived on our shores carrying the memories and the traditions and the Christian faith of their ancestors as a sacred inheritance, an unbreakable link between the old world and the new. We are part of one civilization, Western civilization. We are bound to one another by the deepest bonds that nations could share, forged by centuries of shared history, Christian faith, culture, heritage, language, ancestry, and the sacrifices our forefathers made together for the common civilization to which we have fallen heir.
So this is eloquent, well done, it is crisp, it was right to the point, and as I mentioned, got a standing ovation. When Trump was asked about it, you know, I was wondering if the vice president was off script a year ago when he went over there and basically eviscerated Europe. I thought it was in a way in which I think the jarring was okay. I thought the delivery was fine. I thought the content was a little bit too abrasive, especially as a first impression. And it's one Europe will never forget. And this guy and J.D. Vance wanted to be president. But in comes Rubio to kind of smooth the edges, especially if the Greenland seems to have upset some people, whether they should or not. It doesn't matter. It did. Okay? It did. So Trump was asked about this. What do you think? What do you think about J.D.? What do you think about Rubio? Cut six.
Marco Rubio receives really positive reviews in Munich.
Very good reviews.
Is there a scenario in which you would support him at the top of the ticket in 2028?
Something I don't have to worry about now. I've got 3 years to go. So it's something I don't have to worry. JD's fantastic, and Marco's, they're both fantastic. I think, really, and I think Marco did a great job in Munich.
And I'll just put an end to this. Marco Rubio will not run for the top of the ticket if JD does, unless something unforeseeable happens. If things are right now, he's not doing it. And if you think that Rubio is just pure political ambition, you haven't been paying attention. He just worked his butt off in the Senate. And then he wasn't even pushing hard to be the number two, to the point where rumor had it that Trump said to Marco, do you want this? And then when he didn't get in, he was a finalist, and whether he was in or out, you hold these rumors, Doug Burgum in or out, you know, they were there, and then it ended up being J.D. Vance. And then when he was asked to be Secretary of State, he got just about every vote. And when you watch him on Capitol Hill, except for Chris Murphy, who's just unbelievably divisive and angry, they just say, this guy's good. And J.D. Vance, I think, is really talented. He's not as experienced. We'll see what he can do. I have yet to see him flummoxed in a debate or in an interview. He's very strong. But then on the other hand, you saw on display what Democrats have. They chose to go to Munich, I think, make us look terrible. I could come out and say, and we disagree with some of the things the president's doing and how he does it. But if I run, this is what I think. Instead, they just were demeaning. They assumed that Europe hates Trump, too. I think in the beginning they did. They don't anymore. I think they're starting to see the merit in the abrasiveness, in the directness, in the fact that America is going strong in the economy and the military. Yes. But they're starting to say, hey, we kind of like the idea that he's freed us to be a little nationalistic ourselves and be pro-France, pro-Germany, pro-UK. And don't just acquiesce to the U.S. and make comments behind our back. That's my opinion. But then when you see
The people they sent to Munich to kind of show their wares, it is pathetic. AOC, did you see her? I'll play it shortly. Hillary Clinton, a bitter old woman who never won when she had to, won one Senate race in a blue state, and then she gets out of the Senate and runs for president, and she loses to an upstart named Barack Obama, despite the Clinton machine and all their dirty tactics. And then she becomes Secretary of State, leaves after 2 years to run for president, has to cheat in order to get the nomination from the pathetic socialist Bernie Sanders, and then loses to this upstart named Donald Trump and never accepts it, but launches the Russia hoax. And then you have Gavin Newsom, who thinks the whole world wants to talk about climate change. That guy can't read the room. And his abrasive, angry thing may be great with Democrats or on his podcast, but I think it looks terrible overseas. Makes us look bad. But I hope people overseas realize, you know, even if you don't like Trump, this is not good look. Listen to AOC. Cut 12.
Too often in the West, we look the other way for inconvenient populations to act out these paradoxes, whether it is, you know, kidnapping a foreign head of state, whether it is threatening our allies to colonize Greenland, whether it is looking the other way in a genocide. Hypocrisies are vulnerabilities, and they threaten democracies globally.
So think about this. She's actually in Germany saying, I assume that she says Israel committed genocide. Okay, in Germany, good luck with that. Way to keep your head on your shoulders and think about the big picture. When you talk about colonizing Greenland, Europe didn't love it. But the point is, what's your plan for the Arctic? What is your plan? Did you even know Greenland existed? It wasn't a fictional Viking wet dream? And when he talks about inconvenient populations, what are you talking about? If you look at Marco Rubio, he's Hispanic. You look at the Secretary of Treasury, he's gay. If you look at the Secretary of Housing, he's black. If you look at one of his best friends in the region, two of them, one from Argentina, the president there, and the president of El Salvador. Pretty sure they're not European. So when we come back, I got Alan West at the bottom of the hour. The Texas primaries are starting for that Senate race. Critical, could make or break the balance of power in the Senate. And then I want you to hear from Hillary Clinton when she weighs in and gets her comeuppance from a deputy prime minister. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Real talk, real guests, real insight. Where curiosity meets conversation. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So when you run for president, are you going to impose a wealth tax or a billionaire's tax?
I don't think that I don't think that anyone, and that we don't have to wait for any one president to impose a wealth tax. I think that it needs to be done expeditiously.
You idiot. It's already in California. It is so bad and so detrimental. Every billionaire is moving out of the wealth tax industry. You know who doesn't want it? Gavin Newsom, because he's saying this is going to be hard on us because we're going to lose the people that pay almost all the taxes in our state. The latest one to leave is Mark Zuckerberg. And she was actually dressed down right after by a true economic expert that said a wealth tax may sound good, but almost in all cases, it blows up in your face along with price controls, which people, you know, try to work around the edges and get some prices down and maybe do some things unnatural to the markets. That's just, he is 36 years old, but even younger when it comes to actual political experience. Remember, when Barack Obama was this upstart senator, he knew he needed to brush up in his foreign policy credentials. He traveled with Senator Lugar, a Republican, to talk about loose nukes in Soviet Union. Went overseas and started getting himself out there so people met him in different countries. So by the time he ran for president, at least he was known around the globe. She, if anyone is smart to her, tell her, Senate only. Senate only. Go beat Chuck Schumer and then learn something about the world.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I just haven't made a decision on that race yet. It's got a ways to go, and I haven't. He's a good man. John is a good... I like all three of them, actually. I like all three. Those are the toughest races. They've all supported me. They're all good, and you're supposed to pick one. So we'll see what happens, but I support all three.
So that's the President of the United States weighing in on the Republican race to get the nomination to keep that Senate seat red in Texas, which is not a layup, believe it or not. Talcredo, I forgot his last name, but he's an impressive guy, at least speaker, but he has a little problem with the facts. And the number two is Crockett, who's to me is a comical version of a would-be lawmaker. She is unbelievably not self-aware. And she is just a firebrand who CNN and MSNBC love to book. But please tell me what she's ever done in Congress that shows any progress or impact. Joining us now, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. He's Dallas County Republican Chair and American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Colonel, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, it's great to be with you. And I'm outside the South Garland Library polling location. And I just cast my vote in this GOP primary.
Well, of course, early voting started today. Ken Paxton, Wesley Hunt, or John Cornyn?
Well, I'm not going to divulge that publicly.
You're not?
I will call you on your...
Because you're a powerful guy. Your endorsement matters.
I am not a powerful guy. I mean, let's be very honest. But I will call you offline and I'll let you know. But we have three good choices. I think it's going to go to a runoff. I believe it'll be Paxton and either Paxton, Cornyn, Paxton, and Hunt. We hosted Wesley Hunt at the Dallas County GOP office yesterday for a meet and greet and a kind of a town hall. He did very well. A lot of people were impressed with him. That's the second time he's done that. Mr. Paxton, Attorney General Paxton, and Senator Cornyn have not done that. So I think that Wesley Hunt is really getting out there on the ground. But regardless, when we go to the general election, I think that the GOP candidate will still be successful because State Representative Tallarico and Congresswoman Crockett, they're really confined to the urban population centers. They're not going to play well out in West Texas or South Texas along the border or East Texas.
Tallarico went on Rogan. I guess he made a good impression there. I have not listened to it back. I have a life. But Colonel, a couple of things. We look at all three candidates. I could not be more impressed with Wesley Hunt. I just didn't know why it was necessary for him to run now because he was an effective congressman.
I can answer that.
Okay.
I think that he saw an opportunity between the grassroots here in Texas are still upset with Senator Cornyn for supporting the gun control legislation. That's a tall hurdle for him to climb. And with Attorney General Paxton, we have to be very honest. There are some character issues there. And as a matter of fact, there are people at church with me on Sunday. They discussed that with me as the chairman. They wanted my perspectives. So I think that Wesley Hunt saw an opportunity, and it's a good opportunity to give people another choice.
Yeah. Let's say he's not successful in the primary. Can he go back and grab that seat that he had?
I think he could go back. He'd have to run again because he can't run for both seats. He could run again, and I think he could be successful. And there are other things that he can do. He's a strong voice. He could be someone that President Trump, without a doubt, could place in his administration in the Secretary of War, Department of War, Department of Defense. So his future is bright. I mean, look, I'm an old guy. I'm over 65 now. He's a young guy. He has an incredible road ahead.
So let's now look at Paxton. You mentioned the personal problems, and they looked at the polling. They say Paxton has got a lead over Cornyn in the primary, but when it comes to the general, Cornyn and Hunt win easily. Paxton's got basically a 1-point lead over Crockett. So across the state, I mean, we could be clinical about this. It doesn't matter, you know, to be a cheerleader for anybody. The numbers don't lie.
No.
As a general Texas state candidate, the Cornyn and Hunt are better choices.
No, I would wholeheartedly agree with you. And I will tell you that that has to be part of the political calculus, if you want to look at it that way. Because you want to select the person that is best to go into the arena and achieve victory for you. That's what a primary is all about. And you don't want to have someone going into the general election that's already handicapped before you even get there. And so, yes, I think, you know, looking ahead, you could see what type of ass the Democrats were running against a Attorney General Paxton, what they would run against the Cornyn. And I think it'd be very hard, if they're always talking about Jim Crow and racism, to run a lot of, you know, negative ads against a Wesley Hunt.
All right, I want to go to the global stage, and I just don't think it's a great look. I was just trying to get a perspective on Munich in the past. Have candidates gone over there at the National Security Council, International Security Council, and have they gone over there and trashed the other party or trashed the current president? And I guess Trump was pretty aggressive a few years ago, but I watched AOC, I watched Whitmer, I watched Hillary Clinton, I watched Gavin Newsom go over there and just have a political fight with Donald Trump in front of a bunch of people they thought would agree with them. And I think the world, my opinion, in 2016, they didn't know what hit them with Trump. And, you know, Trump came out so different from anybody else. You could say abrasive, direct, whatever. But now I think they're getting used to it. And after missing it for 4 years and being America the compliant, now all of a sudden they're like America the leader. And I don't think that everybody's against Trump. Greenland might have upset some people the way he made a speech and said NATO hasn't done anything when they did stuff in Afghanistan, Iraq was wrong. But for the most part, they're getting it. And some people are running on put the United Kingdom first, put France first, you know, put Hungary first. They're running on the Trump doctrine. And even though Trump's going to be gone in 3 years. So I want you to hear what Gavin Newsom said in Germany. Listen to this. Two Germans, cut 16.
I want to remember all those images of masked men, the secret police, something familiar in Germany. Those first images came out of my state. We saw 4,000 National Guard federalized. First time. We'd never seen anything like this. And 700 active duty Marines sent not overseas, but to the second largest city in the United States of America, militarizing the streets of my city. Masked men showing up, unaccountable.
Do you want to give him a history lesson? He's comparing the National Guard to masked men. And do you remember the 60s? You were a little young back then, Colonel West, but I believe Eisenhower had to use the National Guard because of the refusal to integrate schools and various court decisions. He's equating American National Guard members and an American president to Hitler and his killers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about it. Again, Eisenhower was a Republican president, and he had to, once again, use the National Guard against Democrat policies of segregation. And so now we have a Republican president that is having to use, you know, ICE and, you know, potentially National Guard because of Democrat policies to open up the border. And it's not so much the comparison between, you know, World War II, but also when you look at Europe now, there are many people that are reversing their decision about all the open migration that they have allowed to come into Europe. And so Gavin Newsom, I mean, you want to talk about open mouth, insert foot, and look like an idiot? That's exactly what happened between him, AOC, and Whitmer. Just horrible appearances.
I'm almost embarrassed. Like, if you're in France and England, you're like, really? I mean, you know, it's almost like your parents fighting in front of you. Is this really what, that's not why I invited you. Just tell me what you would do different. Say, you know, we had a crime problem in the U.S., and the way Donald Trump did it, I was totally against it, and here's why. That's the way you do it. Now, if you run for president, you try to win a nomination, you're on the debate stage, that's fine. And the world will watch, you know, that's up to them. But when you go to the world and say this, it's just embarrassing. And also, they're trying to make it seem as though don't listen to Donald Trump because nobody likes him. And they just watched him win the popular vote and run through all the battleground states. And like anybody else, your approval ratings drop a little bit. All those world leaders know it. When you start making decisions, I don't care if you're Reagan or Lincoln, especially Lincoln. I'm pretty sure he only got elected with about 40% of the vote, and a bunch of, I heard this thing about a civil war, and a bunch of states defected. I'm pretty sure Lincoln's on Mount Rushmore. So I want you to hear something else. I didn't know much about this guy. You probably did. His name is Rupert Lowe, and he's a conservative. Mm-hmm. And this is what's resonating in England right now, who are starting to sober up and wake up. Listen to this. And sorry about the music underneath it.
I don't particularly care if we're liked by the rest of the world. I care if we're respected. Because right now, Britain is a joke, and it has been for some time. I want the British government to put the British people at the top of the agenda.
Yeah.
We should make no apologies for that. Learn from Trump. Let's be unapologetically patriotic. Slash tax across the board. Enforce the border. Deport those with no right to be here. And plenty more. Let's make Great Britain great again.
I mean, I get chills. Make the U.S. great again. I want England to be strong. I want all these countries to be strong. Yeah. And they're getting it.
No, without a doubt. And you think about just, you know, the safety and security aspect. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here with the criminal illegal immigrants. But think about the rape gangs that are going across the United Kingdom. And the fact that, you know, Mr. Starmer and his administration and even their policy, they're dismissing it. They're saying we cannot culturally offend people. You can't have dogs because that could offend people. That's not the Brits that we know. That's not the Brits that I was in Afghanistan with that were over there in Helmand Province. So, yes, I think that you're going to see people once again restore their own sense of national pride and, dare I say it, a sense of nationalism. That's not a bad word. That's not a dirty word. And I think Europeans are going to reestablish that.
And lastly, this Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem, but nice person. But if this is true, what I read in the Wall Street Journal in one of these magazines, that she has $48 billion to build a wall and it's sitting on her desk uncommissioned, and if she doesn't use it, it goes away when Trump goes away. Come on, you're a Texas resident, powerful person with the Republican Party, and this is all we talked about is border security. You finally got the money to build the wall, and she is not cashing the check and hiring the workers. To me, if this is true, you guys are building your own wall, and you haven't stopped.
Yeah.
But if this is true, that can't stand. Can it, Colonel West?
No, it can't stand. And we down here in Texas should not have to do that. That is a federal government responsibility under Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. Let me just let everyone know again, Texas shares 1,254 miles of border with Mexico, and really with the drug cartels, because those are the people that are controlling the southern side of that border. We have gotten operational control of our border, but we need to make sure that we maintain operational control of that border. And Secretary Noem, please go ahead, cash the check, get people down here working, and also make sure that we have the seismic capability to ensure people aren't tunneling under our border to come into the United States of America.
Absolutely. The technology is underappreciated and underreported. There's technology everywhere on those fences. It is not. People say, oh, it's back to the Viking days or back to ancient Rome. It's not. It's used everywhere. It's used in the Vatican. But then you put technology around it, and it just continues to make it easier for the men and women. I don't worry about Trump. I worry about the next president. You know, that's not going to care as much. And I don't want to be talking about this every 4 years. This shouldn't be a decision. You know, it should be, we all agree, we have to have control of our border. And that's why I think Trump just gets to the next level, has to do comprehensive immigration reform, even if it's reinforcing what's already on the books. Find out if there's some common ground here to fix it for people who want to come the right way. Because I think that we make it way too hard for people who are doing it the right way. Personally, I think this decision both sides can agree on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We do. And let's reform our legal immigration system, but let's make sure that we respect the rule of law and honor our laws when it comes to illegal immigration.
Go get him, Colonel West. Look forward to this primary result.
Sir.
The whole country will be watching. I appreciate it. On the left, too. I'm not sure if Crockett's going to win or lose. Thanks so much, Colonel. See you soon. When we come back, we'll expand on our conversation about the shutdown. We haven't really discussed it yet. Why this is going on is ridiculous. The latest proposal from Chuck Schumer that can't be accepted on its face, but shows, I think, that they know they look terrible right now. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We have proposed that the guardrails that will be applied to ICE are applied not just to the present funding, but to the previous funding that was in the big bad bill. That's very important to us. So that will rein in all of the ICE agents, no matter where they're funded. But second, there's a simple answer to this. Republicans, go along with this common sense, these common sense proposals, and we'll fund the whole DHS bill, the whole Department of Homeland Security bill. Just go along. Again, I cannot repeat enough.
So here's what he did. He started with 20, got down to 10, and now they might be down to 3. Chuck Schumer's just, don't even listen to that. Here's what the deal is. They say, body cameras, check. I'm serious. Everybody said check. Border Patrol, got it. They're funded. It's coming. Number two, they want identity on all the shirts, not a check. They want the masks off, and they want judicial warrants. Not going to happen. Can you imagine? You got a guy over in Minneapolis, another guy over in Memphis, and then you got to go to these judges, and they're going to go, okay, I was appointed by Barack Obama. I don't like ICE. I'm not going to do it. Or that clown Boasberg over in D.C., he's ever going to okay any of these judicial warrants in the speed in which they got to act? Are you kidding? If you wanted judicial warrants, you should have said something when President Biden was letting in 9 to 15 million people. You really think we're going to be knocking on the judge's door 24 hours a day trying to get permission in order to pursue a dangerous criminal, illegal immigrant, at the very least, overstated and ignored immigration and ignored our laws, came here illegally and then refused to go to court? Are you kidding? So that's not going to happen. But if you're a Democrat, you go meet, you get the body cameras, you get the no roving patrols. That's one thing they wanted. I don't really think we should be roving patrols looking for people that look like they're illegal, getting out of a car, going to you here, give me your papers. We don't do that. You got to have some type of intelligence in order to go after it, to get an administrative warrant, if you will. But take the win. Bovino is now out. Noem has stepped back. Homan has come in. They talked about the communication with local and federal. You de-escalated in Minneapolis. If you aren't a Democrat, do you understand this is the most you're going to get ever? The president said we have to go with a softer touch. These are all a check mark in your column. Instead, you use the Sunday shows to go beyond again. There's a reason Donald Trump is in office because of the breakdown of the border, more than anything else, in my opinion, along with the wokeness gone wild. But now you say, well, he went too far with his ICE pursuit. They've been too aggressive. Okay. But then you made ICE the enemy. You're calling the Gestapo. You're actually in New York City coaching teams to go out and thwart, like they did in Minneapolis, all the best you can, all ICE operations. You have made them the enemy. Now you want to drop their mask and put their name on their shirt so they can go. You can go harass their family. Forget it. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. That's why the shutdown's going on. But we have a lot to look forward to. The State of the Union's next week. I'll be coming to you from Washington, D.C. before and after. Don't move.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here, coming to you from Manhattan, heard around the country and around the world. We have a lot coming up this hour on our show, including some information overseas that Iran says that they've reached a framework of agreement when it comes to their nuclear program, which, number one, if they ever agree to anything, you can never believe it. Please, we all know that. They're an evil regime that lives just to exist and torture their people on an ideology. They're a death cult. And number two, I can't see anything coming out of this. And if I'm just going to tell you what it says. The United States, Well, we're going to go over that shortly. It looks like they're out there. They're talking. They're in Oman. They don't even talk direct, but it's hard for me to believe they reached an understanding on a framework. Does anyone believe they're not going to try to rebuild their nuclear program? They're already doing it. Ballistic missiles have been flowing in ever since, and money's flowing out to Hezbollah and Hamas, but they're barely, not nearly like it was. So we'll talk about that. This hour, we're going to be joined by a couple of great guests. And if I can just get these, my pages apart, we have standing by Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery about this and so much more. And Paul LePage, the 74th governor of Maine, when you tell, he wants to be a congressman now from Maine. And I hope, and he does in this district, he could win in that blue state. But he talks about corruption per capita. He says it's worse in Maine than it is in Minneapolis. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
There's a simple answer to this. Republicans go along with these common sense proposals and will fund the whole DHS bill, the whole Department of Homeland Security bill. Just go along. Again, I cannot repeat enough.
That is Senator Chuck Schumer, an embarrassment of a senator, desperate to keep his job, now wants to shut down TSA, Secret Service, FEMA, because he doesn't like the way ICE is operating. My sense is they know they're on the wrong side of this. They don't know how to take the W. And now we're going to see TSA workers angry, maybe sick outs, and maybe when they don't get paid.
Number two.
Iran ultimately is governed, and its decisions are governed by Shia clerics, radical Shia clerics. So it's hard to do a deal with Iran. We've always said it's hard, but we're going to try.
I don't know why we're trying. We have an armada there ready to go. Iran talks resume, and the stakes have never been higher. Why any nuke deal with this terrorist cult is a bad one and would call out and would sell out the Iranian people.
Number one.
So when you run for president, are you going to impose a wealth tax?
I don't think that anyone, and that we don't have to wait for any one president to impose a wealth tax. I think that it needs to be done expeditiously.
Really, she's an economic genius as well as an international genius. Midterms front and center. And 2028 is already heating up. We look at the long line on the left stacking up and who was exposed on the international stage in Munich over the weekend. And we'll talk about that shortly. But we're just getting some reports now about maybe the framework of a deal has been reached when it comes to what's happening with the U.S. and Iran and their nuclear program, which we pretty much obliterated. So they're looking to a deal to try to rebuild a nuclear stockpile and a nuclear military site that we destroyed. So they could be rebuilt, but we said we're going to destroy it again, or Israel will. So we'll see how that goes. Let's bring in Admiral Montgomery. Admiral, your thoughts about a possible deal with Iran?
Well, first, Brian, thank you for having me. And like you, I two thoughts. One, I mean, this is really breaking, so I really have to see the details. And two, even if I read the details, and Steve Witkoff believes it, and somebody else believes on our side, I don't believe it. These guys said they have a primary goal of suppressing their people and running a radical state, Shia-based state. I agree with that. They also have a secondary goal of eliminating the little Satan, Israel, and eliminating the big Satan, the United States. And they've never walked away from these goals. And I don't think you can make a deal with someone who maintains as their operating premise that they are going to eliminate you at a future date. I just think it's highly unlikely that they would hew to the deal, and they would instead be working around the clock to develop a nuclear weapon and to develop the ballistic missiles necessary to deliver it first to Israel and then to the United States.
So here's the statement. The foreign ministry just gave these remarks. We've reached an understanding on main principles with the U.S. Our State Department is still not confirming nor commenting or the talks today. We are looking for confirmation now that we could even say that. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean a deal's done. Shake your hand. Let's write it up. Number one, the other deal took years, and it was a terrible deal. We had no on-site inspections. They were rebuilding their nuclear program, and in 10 years, the deal would evaporate, and they can go make their own nukes. It would have been over by now. So, and that's why Congress didn't approve it. The Senate couldn't get the votes, and it was majority Democrat, and Barack Obama was the president. Guys like Chuck Schumer and Menendez wouldn't even vote for it. So now they're going to go back and do a deal. It's just, I don't know. If you talk about a loss of credibility, if this was to go through, and we're a long way from that, I think the president would lose a lot of credibility in the region.
I think both in the region and, you know, with American voters, you can't tell American voters that I need to bring two carrier strike groups, four or five extra fighter squadrons, all these air defense assets in, because this is a, an out of control state that needs to be brought to heel and then back off. I am slightly worried about, while this deal, quote, is going on, is this framework's being solidified, that we spend the next 5 to 6 months, you know, on knife's edge in terms of military readiness in the Middle East. This is, you know, this is goal area number four in the president's national defense strategy, national security strategy, after the Western Hemisphere, after Asia, even after Europe. And so the idea that, you know, we're spending a lot of military readiness here and not taking action is it's a mistake. It's a mistake Obama made, by the way, from 2011 to 2014. And as a result, we could not get carriers underway in Trump's first tour in 2017 and 2018. There was a whole year where no U.S. aircraft carrier strike group deployed, and Air Force fighter readiness dropped down to 33%. I'm just telling you this because if you get in a long, winding thing, which is exactly what Iran's headed, you know, would like to head for on this, where you never really come to a consensus, but you spend 2 years doing it, we're going to have a real problem.
But the thing is you know better than me, Admiral Montgomery, with your experience, and of course, you're a senior director of the Center for Cyber and Technology. You are pivoting to China by taking on Iran because China is getting their discount oil from Iran. That affects their economy. Number two is, as long as Iran is in the Middle East, creating havoc everywhere it can, we're always going to be redirected there, no matter what we want to do. It works in all our enemies' interest to do that. If we find a way, and I'm not saying it's easy, if we find a way to take out the leadership in the IRGC and take down these politicians who are remarkably unpopular with their own people, that will allow us fundamentally to pivot more to the Pacific.
Oh, 100%. The military readiness issue isn't an issue if you actually eliminate a problem. The problem we got in the Obama administration was we burned all this readiness and didn't eliminate a problem. You know, now we're back. We're burning, what we call burning readiness out here again. So I just hope the president sees through, you know, the likely veil of BS that we're getting from the Iranians on this, and he takes care of business.
I do too. I want you to hear what Alex Gray said. He was the former National Security Council Chief of Staff, Cut 31.
As long as the Ayatollah theocracy is in control in Iran, the people are going to be oppressed. They're going to do everything they can to destabilize the region, to stabilize their neighbors, and they're not going to do anything that the United States wants them to do. I mean, the Ayatollahs have been very clear. The missile regime is not on the table. The nuclear program is sort of on the table, but not really. And they're not going to cut down on the proxy militias, the Hezbollahs and the Houthis that they've been using to destabilize the Middle East. They basically have taken all that off the table. So there's very little for us to discuss with the Ayatollahs, which I think, Jason, is why the president has decided to have this incredible U.S. naval presence in the region to make clear that he has options if they don't negotiate.
So we got the presence, we got the two carriers, we have the missile defense in theory up. We've already met with Prime Minister Netanyahu. He understands it now. He's not being rushed. So you can't say the president just knee-jerk reaction to the protest. I'm going to hit him. He's actually thinking this out, and I think military people have to appreciate that to understand the risk. He's extremely worried about casualties. I'm sure you don't want to challenge Alex Gray on anything he said, or maybe you do.
Well, no, I agree with him completely. First, on the idea, what was wrong with the previous deal, the JCPOA, was exactly what Alex said there. It didn't address the missile, the ballistic missile issue, and it didn't address the support to proxies. And that's why the president ripped it up when he came into office in Trump 45. So absolutely, Alex is right. And we do not just the Navy. Like I commanded a carrier strike group. I have a preference for them. They're not the most important thing. There are Air Force fighter squadrons stationed throughout the theater, and most importantly, it's our long range strategic strike from the United States, B-2s, and then later, if necessary, B-52s and B-1s delivering longer range, you know, standoff cruise missiles, but B-2s going downtown. That's what imposes cost on a regime like Iran's. And you're right. The concern here is I don't think there's any desire to put any, non-soft force, non-special operators on the ground. you know, just like Israel probably had some special operators on the ground during the 12-day war, you know, back last year. And I suspect the same thing would have to happen here. Now, here's another good deal. Instead of just having the U.S. join for the final day of a 12-day war, if we do this together, you bring together the U.S. forces there and a very potent Israeli air force that's been reloading weaponry for about 8 months. And with a promise from us that we'll help them reload again when it's over, I think Netanyahu would be all in on this. And then we'll bring something they desperately need. They are very short refueling aircraft, and that kind of hampered them last time. So if we can bring U.S. refueling aircraft into the mix, we make the Israelis more effective. The U.S. and Israelis together make each other more effective. We can impose costs in a serious manner on the IRGC and on the ballistic missile, drone, and nuclear programs.
Rear Admiral Montgomery, not to give anyone ideas, I'm not sure how many Iranian officials are listening, but where are we the most vulnerable?
Well, I think we've acknowledged that. And the reason he could not stick, you know, he had wanted to strike during the protests, and he could have with long-range strategic bombers, as I mentioned, B-2s, and then with the limited stuff that was in the Gulf at the time. The reason he didn't do it, our ground forces spread throughout anywhere from 14 to 18 bases in the Middle East, from Syria, where we still have some, Iraq, Kuwait, Bahrain, the Navy there, Qatar, UAE, and even Saudi Arabia. So we're spread out around all these bases, and you got to have some level of either air defense for those bases with Patriot missile systems, THAAD missile systems, partner air defense. Many of our partners have bought Patriot and THAAD, or a very good plan for getting people below ground and into a secure area. Because when we killed Soleimani, you know, back during Trump 45, the IRGC commander, General Soleimani, they did strike back at our forces. No one was killed, but a lot of soldiers, you know, got their noggins rattled and some serious, you know, long-term PTSD, post-traumatic stress problems from the attack. So we want to make sure our men and women serving in the Middle East on the ground are well protected.
I hear you. Let's just pivot for the last few minutes over to Ukraine. Here's President Trump urging Ukraine to make a deal. Cut 47.
Well, the big talks, it's going to be very easy. I mean, look, so far, Ukraine better come to the table fast. That's all I'm telling you. We are in a position. We want them to come.
They're at the table. I don't know what he's talking about. Do you?
Yeah, I don't. I'm in Ukraine. I'm training their military on some things. And I was a little surprised by those comments. All the concessions have been made by Ukraine because the president put leverage on Ukraine and forced them to make concessions. I think the real issue is we have to put the same level of leverage on Putin and Russia. And it's the thing you mentioned earlier in the show, which worked against Venezuela and is starting to work against Iran. It's seizing shadow fleet ships delivering illegal oil to China and India, who are the two primary takers. You know, then there's Turkey, Hungary, so a few other countries. But China and India are the big takers. And this is the money that fuels the Russian war machine. Will Putin still fight? You bet, because I think that's the kind of authoritarian he is, and he doesn't care how many people he loses. But we've got to, if we ever want to get him to the table for a deal, we've got to put pressure on him. And like we said on Iran, I'm not sure I trust a deal with Putin, but I certainly wouldn't trust a deal that he didn't have to give any concessions in on. You know what I mean? So right. I don't think the problem is Zelensky here, Brian. I think it's Putin.
Well, I know it is, and most of the world does. I even think Trump knows it. But what he's doing is being tough on Russia without saying it. I mean, getting India to stop buying oil. He's starting to now. Ukraine now, out of nowhere, China says we're going to help you rebuild. Told Ukraine, I'm going to help you rebuild your energy sector. At the same time, I'll give you humanitarian aid. I know that if it wasn't for China, this war wouldn't be on. But how about this? The Russian economy, they say, is faltering, and its forces have sustained more losses than it's ever been for the first time that they're able to replace over the last 2 months. And now Starlink has been stopped because they were pirating it. So this is the first time that time is not on the Kremlin's side. Am I overstating it?
No, listen, three things are, you made three great points there. Number one, for the first, you know, this is the first time when they lost more people in a month in combat casualties than they took in. Now, we need to see how this plays out over a year. He brings in about 400,000 new people a year. He kills 150,000 of them, or the Ukrainians do. 200,000 get wounded, and 50,000 go back with mental problems, right? I mean, he destroys a new generation of Russians every year with 400,000 new things. So that is at risk. The second one is we'll have to see that India really sticks to this. But if they do, it's going to put all of it on China. And at some point, China's going to tell Russia, we have to cut a new deal where I give you even less money mm-hmm. for the oil you give me, since I'm your only real customer in capitalism. I can drive a deal with you. And then finally, what I tell you is Ukraine's got China's thing's not a legitimate thing. China is fighting Ukraine right now. North Korea is fighting Ukraine.
Iran is. I'm against a break, but man, you're 100% right on this and gives me great hope. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Admiral Montgomery, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Where big stories meet bigger conversations. Stay informed and energized with the Brian Kilmeade Show. That makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I tell you, I didn't have a chance. I hated stopping the Admiral when he did, but as you know, we're against the break. I think it's really important for you to know. I mean, almost everything I read, I'm not just saying that because you know I'm on Ukraine's side 110%. And the Russians can throw endless amount of bodies at it. We keep hearing that. But can you imagine losing 35,000 bodies dead, you know, off the battlefield a month? That's terrible. Do you know what they're trying to do? It's going up to 50. Can you imagine 50,000? We didn't have that with two wars over 20 years. And Russians just are throwing mass at it. These are prisoners, untrained, go up front. They leave the families hostage. They pay them off. How long can they pay off the families? How long can they live off oil, which is lower? Do you understand, as Trump came into office and started pumping, that it brought the price of oil down? Originally, it shot up. They're delivering oil, so they're getting more money. And now they're pressuring Europe not to buy it. India is now out. Other countries, now we got to pressure Turkey, Brazil, and China. Now, China wants to get Europe on their side, right? Instead of us. If you want to win over Europe, you stop that war in Ukraine. Think about that.
News, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Why'd you take their money?
I didn't.
You took $10,000.
No, that's a false statement.
$10,000 9 days after the meeting.
False statement.
You took $10,000. Here's what happened. They went to your office.
That's a false statement.
They solicited money from you. They solicited help from you.
That's also wrong.
They came to your office. It was your official office. You met with them for 54 minutes.
No, they didn't.
They asked you for help. You pledged it to them, and they talked repeatedly about money. In fact, it's all they talked about.
That's a lie.
Money, 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 money. They said, we will put our dollars in the right place.
Keith Ellison getting grilled, lying again in public. Minneapolis, ripe with corruption, but it doesn't stop there. Most of which around the immigrant Somali community, some of which illegal. Bottom line is millions upon millions left through TSA. We've already seen the testimony, and the money went to Somalia, and we saw that 74 people plus have been indicted, 9/10 of which are Somali. But it doesn't end there. Joining us now is Paul LePage, the 74th governor of Maine from 2011 to 2019, who's looking to get back into the fray as a Republican in Congress, and he's running there in Maine. And it'll be great to have him if he can prevail in that very blue state. Governor, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's a pleasure to be back, Brian.
So when you're hearing this back and forth, are you thinking to yourself, same thing with my state?
Absolutely, same thing with my state. The only difference is, and I think I told you once before, is it started when I was governor, because the attorney general was the current governor, and she would not prosecute fraud.
And she's a Democrat now, trying to be the next senator from Maine, trailing to a guy with Nazi tattoos that he's trying to scrape off his body.
Exactly. And, you know, it's not just her, though. It's the entire Democratic Party in Maine. When she would not prosecute, I tried to go to the legislature and get some money to hire lawyers to do the prosecutions. And we had somewhere about 180 different cases that we were looking into. And it involved Medicaid, it involved EBT cards, it involved SNAP. It was a laundry list. And she went to the Democratic Party and told them not to give me the money. And they all stood in line and voted no.
So that's insane. So when you talk about the Somali community in Maine, what role do they play? And what role do they have in this corruption schemes?
Well, what they do is they set up these phony companies, and they say that they're visiting people. And what, in fact, they're doing is they're overbilling, and in some cases, they just falsely bill. They bill without even visiting anyone, and in many cases, when they do visit some people, they inflate the bills.
What proof do you have of this?
We have whistleblowers that have gone to the state to testify, and nothing has happened.
So, you know, they did an audit in 2024, and they found the $2.1 billion in contracting spending riddled with oversight failures, millions of federal funds now under scrutiny that they can't find. The audit reveals not isolated errors, but a disturbing pattern of systematic negligence that should alarm every taxpayer and policy maker. This is from Maine's 2024 audit. But you knew this.
I knew this. In 2015, the audit showed $660,000 that was unaccounted for. And this is when we started researching individual companies, individuals. And you know, it goes both ways. There's individuals that are fraudulently getting money from the state, and there's companies. And we started looking at them. And not only did I try to get monies to hire lawyers, but I went to the Obama administration, and the Obama administration refused to talk about it. Right. Just absolutely refused.
Because it's you, right? Because you weren't a Democrat.
Oh, that's right. It was me. I was just trying to cause trouble.
Yeah, it's up to you. You want to go back into Congress now. Do you think you could fix this? You already met with Speaker Johnson. What did he say to you?
I told him that he's got to dig deep, and if he wants me to testify, just give me a call, and I'll go to Washington and testify. Inconceivable that this lady, this governor, knew about this back in 15 and did not want to prosecute. The Democratic Party refused to deal with this process at all. So In Minnesota, it may be, and I don't know their politics, and I don't know the governor, and he may not have known, but I know for a fact that this governor knew, and now she's running for the U.S. Senate.
And at 79 years old. So Paula Page, our guest, the 74th governor of Maine, wants to go back into public service and be congressman. And he's got a great chance of doing that, replacing Jared Golden, who was somewhat of an outlier of Democrats. Sometimes he would vote with his conscience. So you believe you can win that? You could win that that congressional district, and there's a reason to believe there's enough Republicans there to give you a fair shot, right?
Correct. The district is 6% more Republicans than Democrat, and in the three statewide races that I've run, I've won it with above 50% each time.
So let's talk about the mismanaged child care funds. The federal government gave millions of dollars of child care funds to the state. It says 70% of those funds must go directly to subsidizing care for low-income families, and they're so far the main DHHS failed to meet those requirements, meaning the federal government could take that money back. So are they aware of this shortfall? Do you think there's an investigation there?
Oh, what the Democrats have recently said is this is a paper error. It's just paperwork errors. It's not fraud. Well, let me tell you this. In 2015, It's just incredible. We investigated actual fraud, and we sent one case to the president, and it was clearly fraud. What they were doing is they were taking their EBT cards to this grocery market in Portland, and they would get cash. And so they, you know, the person would, instead of giving them groceries, they'd give them cash, and these people could go out and just do whatever they wanted with the money. And so what we did is we went to the federal government, and he specifically said that he didn't want to get involved.
Well, number one, how do you even do that? It's got to be used for food directly. If there's money missing from my drawer and I say, well, they gave me an EBT card, I gave them cash back, I get fired. I get fired in that supermarket.
Well, they just build what they do. What they were doing is they were just making false grocery claims, and they were funneling that through the system so they could get reimbursed. But it was just cash that was going out.
All right. So, Paula Page, our guest. So, Paul, what could you tell me about Medicaid fraud? Where should we be looking?
We should be looking at companies like Gateway. We should be looking all these little companies that have, you know, a small little office, and the windows are all covered up, and they bill and bill and bill and bill, and then in the afternoon they move over to another company owned by the same people, and they bill and bill and bill. We have a little office in Augusta, Maine. We have a little office in Augusta, Maine. Mm-hmm. And there are tenants here that are doing exactly that. And you know that there's something wrong when the 19-year-old is driving a very high-priced BMW and they all have very expensive automobiles, and there's never anyone that comes into the building except these three people.
Yeah, they're not quarterback for USC. They're 19 years old without any discernible skills, perhaps. They also have $615,000 in fraudulent school meal reimbursement programs. It might not sound like a ton, but that is money. That usually there's more to that than the total they can find. But it looks like they're just working around the edges to work against programs there to help people. You know, they're not walking in and stealing from billionaires. They're walking into programs that are designed for people who are trying to make ends meet or don't have medical care. I mean, it's unbelievable, the ruthlessness.
It's ruthless. It's absolutely ruthless. This company, Gateway, has admitted overbilling the state, but they're saying it was a paper error. But where's the money? If it's a paper error, and the state paid the money, where's the money?
Yeah, and we're the people that receive. Just show me where it is. Just show me you do. That's you're not right. Good at paperwork. Tell me you don't know how to work a spreadsheet, but you have to show me where it is. So, Congressman,
give me a list of the people you gave the money to, and we'll go visit them.
Is there enough corruption exposed right now where people in Maine might be more open to a Republican or an independent?
I don't think at the present time. I think it's gaining momentum, but it's not there yet. I believe by June, by the primaries, it will be a robust problem. I've spoken to a gentleman that worked for me as in DHHS. He's now working for the president. He was involved in doing the algorithm to find out all the fraud around the country. And the fraud was going all around the country. I mean, we were having people in Florida getting money, people in Nebraska getting money. Every month they get their regular check, and we tracked them down. We were able to take a lot of people off the system, but the in-state fraud, which needed the attorney general's help, she just wouldn't do it.
Paul, so about 3 weeks ago, I think the way the story went, Senator Susan Collins asked the president to pull back on ICE. They saw what was happening in Minneapolis, how bad it was resonating around the country. And you know how I feel. I definitely feel illegal immigrants got to go. Criminals, the worst first. I think I subscribe to the Tom Holman plan. And they did. What kind of illegal immigrant problem do you have in your state?
Well, ICE has been here for a couple of weeks, and they've taken a lot of people out. In fact, there's a lawsuit going on now that a lady, an immigrant, is filing suit against the sheriff's department because she said there was an inhumane cell that she was put in, and now she's been processed and taken to another state, and she's claiming the same thing there. So we have our problems. Believe me, the city of Portland, the city of Lewiston have got a lot of problems with immigration. And my feeling is this. People cannot pick and choose which laws you're going to enforce and which laws you're not. That's going to lead to some much more serious problems. If the law is on the books, you let them do their job. And I have a real problem with people picketing the ICE agents and throwing rocks and ice and everything at them. And, you know, that's lawlessness. And, you know, there's a lot of laws I don't like, but I have to obey them because I want to be a contributing citizen to this country.
I hear you. So, Paul, best of luck. I know you're running for Congress. Hope to catch up with you on Sunday on One Nation. And we continue to expose what's going on in all these states. I don't care Republican or Democrat. It's hard enough making these payments. The country's $37 trillion in debt. A lot of it because of the social welfare spending. And then we find out it's not even getting to the people because there's been almost no oversight. And therefore, there's no trust. Thanks so much, Paul LePage. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
All right. The former governor who wants to be congressman replaced Jared Golden in Maine. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The headlines, the stories behind them, and the people who make them. Only on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Would and should the U.S. actually commit U.S. troops to defend Taiwan if China were to move?
You know, I think that this is such a, you know, I think that this is a, this is, of course, a very longstanding policy of the United States. And I think what we are hoping for is that we want to make sure that we never get to that point. And we want to make sure that we are moving in all of our economic research and our global positions to avoid any such confrontation and for that question to even arise.
So it's hard to imagine someone struggling on the world stage in Munich with a question fundamental to our foreign policy since Chiang Kai-shek was forced to the island of Formosa back in the 1950s, right after World War II. Then AOC, at 36 years old, people say she should run for president. Really? First get a globe, find out where everyone is located, and then find out what policies. Now, if she came out and said, if I'm president, I understand there's some nuances and there's some subtleties to it, but the way I feel, if China goes after Taiwan, we have to make Taiwan a porcupine as much as possible. They've just gotten another $50 billion worth of weapons, the biggest shipment ever. I would tell my Navy, be ready to defend the island. But I'll work it out with my team and my State Department and my Defense Department at the time. If she had said that, and then people criticized her for not saying this strategic ambiguity line that every president has been forced to take and every State Department has said, I'm fine with that. Because Donald Trump would have said the same thing. He would have said no or yes. You know, he wouldn't worked around the edges. But she didn't know the answer. She is somebody that was briefed by, believe it or not, to get ready for this conference for weeks by Bernie Sanders' foreign policy consultant. Which, by the way, what has Bernie Sanders ever said in terms of foreign policy that you thought to yourself, genius, makes a lot of sense, nothing. Anti-Israel, anti-interventionist, Iran's not too bad, I want a honeymoon in the Soviet Union. That's Bernie Sanders' foreign policy. So you chose him. But at the very least, if someone's competent, they say, listen, you're going to get this question, this question, this question. Give me your answer. Now, don't tell me that you went through preparations and weren't expecting a question about Taiwan, one of the hottest hotspots in this hot world of ours that is nothing but heating up. So this is, to me, I wanted to hop on air right away when I saw it this weekend. Here is, you look at what she said and what she didn't say. And then I want to bring you to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, everyone gives her credit for saying migration has gone too far. All right, fine. The migration has gone too far. I give her credit for that. But that's obvious. That was something I appreciate her being obvious. But when she goes out there ripping Donald Trump's foreign policy, and then when they talked about maybe, and she's on the stage with the Czech Republic's associate or assistant prime minister, I thought that that was something that needs to be replayed. And I think that when you look at her and all her experience and her arrogance, I thought it was pretty rich coming from her. So here she is, Hillary Clinton, talking to the Czech Republic guy. Let's listen.
First, I think you really don't like him.
You know, that is absolutely true. But I really, not only do I not like him, I don't like him because of what he's doing to the United States and the world. And I think you should take a hard look at it if you think that there is something good that will come out of it.
Well, what I think Trump is doing in America, I think it is reaction. Reaction for something that, for some policies that really went too far. Too far from the regular people.
Like to, what?
Too
give us
far
some
from realities.
And she went on to say, your woke politics. Went on to say, your border. And she just fired back something about women. I mean, this is a woman who financed or directed a play on suffrage that nobody saw. She comes off so angry. A two-time loser, Obama and Trump. She can't handle it.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest-growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. From Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country and around the world, this is the Brian Kilmeade Show. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Chairman Jason Smith. He's chairman of the House and Ways Committee. If you want to know what the economy's doing, really, affordability, how can they make it work for every American, he's the man with the keys to the budget. And Rebecca Heinrichs is going to be with us, too. Extremely astute on international relations, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. We're following the story with the foreign minister of Iran saying that the U.S. and Iran have agreed on a framework on the nuclear program. Of course, they want sanction relief. Does anybody actually think that Iran can cut a sustainable deal with any nation, let alone us? I don't. But I'm all ears. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
There's a simple answer to this. Republicans go along with these common sense proposals and will fund the whole DHS bill, the whole Department of Homeland Security bill. Just go along. Again, I cannot repeat enough.
He is somebody who's just pretending as if he could get anybody to follow him, let alone Republicans. DHS shutdown continues as TSA paychecks are about 2 weeks away from delay. And FEMA, and once again, will be found to be told to work without pay. This is totally an unnecessary shutdown, even worse than the 43-day shutdown we had before. When do these Democrats going to realize that they overplayed their hand?
Number two.
Iran ultimately is governed, and its decisions are governed by Shia clerics, radical Shia clerics. So it's hard to do a deal with Iran. We've always said it's hard, but we're going to try.
Yup, Iran talks resume, and the stakes have never been higher. Why any nuke deal with this terrorist cult is a bad one, and we cannot sell out the Iranian people.
Number one.
So when you run for president, are you going to impose a wealth tax?
I don't think that anyone, and that we don't have to wait for any one president to impose a wealth tax. I think that it needs to be done expeditiously.
Yes, thank you, genius. The economic Einstein, AOC in Munich, midterms front and center, 28 heating up. We look at the long line on the left stacking up and who is exposed on the international stage, like the woman you just heard from. Let's bring in Congressman Jason Smith. Hey, Chairman. From what you could tell, does a wealth tax work?
Brian, it's great to be with you. Absolutely not. When I hear AOC talk about tax policy and economic issues, I know that we're going straight for the toilet bowl. And she's just trying to flush down any kind of success and capitalism that the United States has.
And how's it working, the threat of billionaires' tax? How's that going in California?
Well, you're seeing billionaires move out of California right and left because of these policies that ultimately is going to lead that much less in revenues for their state. I mean, if you want a recipe of disaster when it comes to economic and tax policy and regulations, look to the state of California.
And Mark Zuckerberg, the latest one, he says, I'm moving to Miami. Just because you're a billionaire doesn't mean you want to give 60% of all the money away. Plus, no one guaranteed them success. They earned it. Almost no billionaires have been, all of them are a first generation. But, Chairman, I saw some pretty encouraging numbers on Friday on core inflation, on inflation. The week before, I saw 130,000 jobs when they expected 65,000 jobs. So why don't you put that into layman's terms? Are people feeling that?
You know, it's getting better. Inflation's the lowest it's been in 5 years. Gas prices is the lowest it's been in 5 years. You're looking at last year, there were more than 615,000 private sector jobs created. And not only counting the 615,000 private sector jobs created last year, when it comes to government jobs, it's the lowest level that it's been in decades. So the jobs that are being created are private sector, not government funded, which was the case in the past. You're looking at, is there more work to do? Absolutely. But when you saw inflation, Brian, go up 21 percentage points under the Biden administration, that is hard to deal with. And that's why people are struggling to put food on their table, clothes on their backs, and gasoline in their cars. But President Trump has helped make sure that inflation is not continuing to rise. In fact, we're in the middle of the largest refund period in the history of America. In fact, more than $400 billion is expected to be refunded to American taxpayers, averaging about $1,000 per person.
So I want you to hear Westmore, Governor Westmore, who's screwing up Maryland. He's got 16 vetoes on his record already with an all-Democratic legislators. Here's Cut 28. Listen to this.
I don't have an answer as to where I would rank the president. I can tell you the reality, though. I can tell you the reality that we are seeing inside of the state of Maryland. And it's troubling that we have seen that over the past year, we have seen how beef is now up 19%, that energy is up 13%, and that's not in Maryland, that's around the country. We have seen an administration that is choosing to use the Constitution like it's a suggestion box, that we are watching how basic civil liberties
and the rest is rhetoric. But I wanted you to get to those numbers. Aren't utilities the state's responsibilities?
Utilities are governed by the states, and that is usually one of the driving cost factors when you look at it. You know, what he didn't talk about is the crime rates. The murder rate in the United States last year was the lowest level since at least 1900. I mean, that's marking the biggest one-year drop in recorded history. Crime's going down. The inflation is going down. Taxes are going down. If the Democrats had their way, they would have raised every single American's taxes 21% on average. Wes is just trying to run for president, and that's his talking points. And those are things that they're working at. A Democrat, for some reason, can never find anything that President Trump does okay or right. But he's been so successful whether it's ending wars in the nation or whether it's getting our jobs and economy under control.
So now you're in the middle of a mini shutdown on DHS. Here's what Chuck Schumer says you need to do in order to open the government. Cut 39.
We have proposed that the guardrails that will be applied to ICE are applied not just to the present funding, but to the previous funding that was in the big bad bill. That's very important to us. So that will rein in all of the ICE agents, no matter where they're funded. But second, there's a simple answer to this. Republicans, go along with these common sense proposals, and we'll fund the whole DHS bill, the whole Department of Homeland Security bill. Just go along. Again, I cannot repeat enough.
So why don't you just go along with it, Jason Smith?
You know, it's bizarre of what the Democrats are thinking. They said that they're going to not fund the Department of Homeland Security because they don't like what the laws that ICE is implementing. But what they don't understand is ICE is completely funded for 4 years under the Big Beautiful Bill. So by not funding Department of Homeland Security, you're not defunding ICE. You're in fact defunding the TSA agents at the airport. You're defunding the U.S. Coast Guard, and you're defunding FEMA. It's madness that they even think that this is sensible. The Democrats, in the last two shutdowns, the one in October and the one now, they shut down government to fight for illegal citizens. Well, they're not citizens, illegal immigrants. They did that in October by demanding that they receive health care, and they're doing it now because they don't like the deportation of illegal criminals.
So they could take the win. You could say, well, because of us, Bovino moved out. Because of us, Tom Homan came in. Because of us, they decided to wear body cams. And maybe you negotiate on something else. You put numbers on their uniforms instead of names. You know, would it be ID numbers? So if you want to, you know, put charges if you think someone's acting unjustly. But they're not going to take off masks. They have stopped roving patrols. In fact, Tom Homan says, we don't do that. So they could honestly say, we force that in the world of politics that you live in, Chairman. So, but instead they say, no, we want judicial warrants before you make a move anywhere. And we want names and masks. We want names on the shirt, on the uniforms, and we want masks. So, I mean, they don't understand that they had legitimate reasons to say they made gains. Have you ever seen such a missed opportunity?
Brian, what I have discovered for the last year, if President Trump says he supports something, the Democrats are the other way. If President Trump would come out and say that he supports removing masks, they would be in support of masks. It just happens over and over again. I mean, I can remember the day where Democrats supported tariffs. Now they're opposed to tariffs because President Trump supports it. It's maddening right now.
So where are we at now fiscally? What can we expect? I know you guys are looking at, voter ID and the SAFE Act. I know what else could you see? I know Senator Kennedy's talking about doing another economic package on reconciliation. What's possible, Chairman?
Well, first off, there's a lot of bipartisan tax policies that still can be addressed and implemented. I also think that there's bipartisan trade items that's out there that can move forward, but also bipartisan health care items. There's numerous things where you can find Republicans and Democrats to work together. But one thing that people aren't talking about that I think is a huge success, Brian, if you look at last year, we had 3 months out of 12 that we brought in more revenues than what we had expenditures. I know it was only 3 months, but the last time that we had 3 months was decades ago. Of course, I want to have 12 months that you have more revenues coming in than expenditures.
Yeah. Wow.
But it's a step in the right direction.
Well, that's true. But in other words, another economic bill you don't see being generated?
I don't see a second reconciliation bill passing. I feel like that what we passed in the current One Big Beautiful Bill has 103 different tax titles. The economic growth that's going to happen from that is going to be astonishing. If you look at just the first quarter since passage of the Big Beautiful Bill, GDP was 4.4%. The fourth quarter, it's projected to be over 5%. And when you look at the GDP for the first, second, and third quarters of this year, it's going to be some of the best numbers we've seen in a very long time.
So with people saying, well, the prices aren't coming down, well, they're going up slower than the 9% it is now, that 2%, you want to get it at 2%. What do you think that does for the Fed? If you feel as though inflation is under control, what do you expect the Fed to do?
The Fed should lower the interest rates. I've been saying that for some time. Interest rates were increased over the last several years because inflation was completely out of control. Inflation has now gotten back to a normal 2.4%, 2.5%. Of course, we'd like to have it right at 2% or lower, but it's still so much better than the 9.2% that was during the Biden administration. And so lowering interest rates would only spur the economic activity, and it would allow Americans to purchase homes for the very first time. You saw first-time home buyers go from the average age of 32 during the first Trump administration to 40 today. We need to lower that and create more opportunity for the average everyday American by having lower interest rates.
So they did one of these studies about where we're at in the big picture, and they say since 2017, they say overall wages have risen 38%, child care costs are up 40%, health insurance up 41%, rent is up 50%, home sale prices 80%. Now, Chairman Smith, you're powerful, but this is not a reflection on you. This is just the facts, right? So this is what's taking place. Do you ever go to big picture conferences, meetings, think tanks where you go, how do we get a hold of this? Even though we have it better than most countries, this is what people feel on the daily basis when they talk about expenses.
We can always do better, and that is a focus of mine. When you talk about real wages, I'm thankful that last year real wages increased more in just 1 year than the prior 4 years combined under the Biden administration. But we need to do better. We absolutely have to do better. We have to continue to lower the cost of goods. We got to have that competitive advantage. What I am thrilled about is when you look at just the trade policy, this past year, we cut our trade deficit by the most significant margins that we have seen in years. In fact, we've increased our exports by almost $185 billion. Those are steps in the right direction because we want manufacturing in the United States. We want our farmers to produce in the United States, but we want the lower cost of goods as well, and all of that can be a balance.
Lastly, when people ask me this all the time, you see the tariff revenue over the year. What was it last year? Do you remember?
It was several hundred billion dollars. So, I don't have the number.
So let's say it's $200 billion, just for argument's sake. How is that folded into the economy? Does it go against the deficit? Like, what account is that money in?
You know, when I mentioned earlier that 3 of the 12 months last year, we actually had a surplus of revenues coming in, that was all attributed to the tariff revenue. And so that is cutting down the deficit that we have every year. The deficit is projected to be cut by almost $300 to $400 billion from last year, which is a big step in the right direction. Do we need to do better? Absolutely. I demand better, but it is definitely helping. So the tariff money is going towards the deficit spending.
All right, Chairman, just a prediction on when this mini shutdown of the DHS is going to end?
I'm worried this could take a long time because I don't see Democrats being reasonable. And they entered a shutdown saying that they're going to defund ICE, and ICE is still funded because they're funded for 4 years. It just doesn't make sense.
Chairman Jason Smith, always great. Appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your insight with our audience. Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The other side does the mean, angry
demagoguery,
you know, exclusive, us, them, you know, divisive politics. That's their home court.
Yeah.
Our court is coming together.
Really? That is Barack Obama telling us that the only one side has demagoguery. How about this? Cut 22.
Donald Trump's modern-day Gestapo is scooping folks up off the streets.
We are living in a moment where the Republican Party has, to a large degree,
become a cult of the individual.
The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters.
I know bullies, and I'm not a name caller. Yes, they are creepy and weird as hell.
Yeah. Who's doing the demagoguery? Both sides. I mean, Barack Obama's just as bad, and he says it with a lot more class, with a lot smoother delivery. By the way, he did a big favor for AOC and Newsom by doing that podcast and making some news about aliens and making those statements, because it would drown out some of the news that they made for being totally incompetent and inappropriate.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Believe me, if there is an attack, that armada that's sitting there isn't to watch and wave goodbye to Israel as it flies into the throat of Iran. All of those ships with their missiles, with their aircraft, and all the bases that have been receiving aircraft, they're all designed to conduct a combined attack.
That is General Jack Keane on the chances of an attack with all our forces, along with Israel, now planned and coordinated. We understand, with two aircraft carriers, missile defense on all our bases, the best we can, while we have talks with Iran about their nuclear program, their ballistic missile program, as well as the financing of their proxy groups. Before today, we heard Iran say, we're only talking about nuclear, and we'll still want to enrich uranium. That's our right. Now the foreign minister says there's an understanding reached for a framework with the U.S. on their nuclear program. And then we just got clarification from our side that says this: progress was made, but there are still a lot of details to discuss. The Iranians say they will come back in the next 2 weeks with detailed proposals to address some of the open gaps in our positions. They want sanction relief. Let's bring in Rebecca Heinrich, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. So it looks like both sides say there's measurable progress. What's your reaction, Rebecca?
Well, first of all, Brian, I mean, we can't have any sanctions relief until the Iranians completely do the things that you just laid out there, the criteria set forward by the Trump administration. If you relieve sanctions first, which is what the Iranians continue to say they want, they will be able to continue to fund this axis of resistance, is what they call it. It's terrorist proxies throughout the region, very dangerous to U.S. forces, our allies in the region. It is intolerable to the United States, and of course, they can continue to rebuild their ballistic missile program in the meantime as well. So we need to see the Iranians actually do what they have so far not been willing to do, which is dismantle their missile program, completely go transparent with their nuclear program, and stop repressing their people, and of course, stop funding these terrorist proxies. So I'm still very pessimistic, Brian. I think that these 2 weeks are meant to delay and to help the Iranians. So I hope that our side, of course, is less patient than the Iranians are.
Here's Marco Rubio yesterday, cut 30.
We have to understand that Iran ultimately is governed, and its decisions are governed by Shia clerics, radical Shia clerics, okay? These people make policy decisions on the basis of pure theology. That's how they make their decisions. So it's hard to do a deal with Iran. We've always said it's hard, but we're going to try. That's what the president is trying.
I just think that we're in, you know, I'm fine. You want to try, you want to have talks, you don't just want to come in. But I think our credibility is on the line. We saw the more uprisings over the weekend, arrests of hundreds. We know the way they're not only shooting people in cold blood, they're shooting people in their hospital beds, and they're kidnapping their families, torturing them in prison, putting them to secret locations. I mean, the only thing that's keeping them in power is their ability to be ruthless on a daily basis with as many people as possible. And we said we got their backs, Rebecca.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're exactly right, Brian. And what Secretary Rubio said there is so important for our American to understand, is that you can't have a regime that's so ideologically, theologically Islamist motivated. They're jihadists at heart, the regime. You can't have a regime like that that's so ruthless and so willing to be inhumane to their own people. You cannot have them funding these armed terrorist proxies that put Americans at risk, that close shipping lanes that hurt the American economy. You can't have them with ballistic missile programs that they can shoot at the Europeans. They can range some Eastern Europeans. They can range the Israelis. They can, of course, range American troops there. And, of course, you can't have them with a nuclear program because they are so, again, motivated by their ideology. And so I agree with you that I do believe that American credibility is on the line. President Trump is so hesitant to say the word red line because he means it when he says it. And he said the red line for him would be if the regime slaughtered their own people, and they have, Brian. 30,000 at least Iranians have been killed in the streets trying to have a better way of life. And so I agree with you that American credibility is on the line.
On top of that, Rebecca Heinrichs, for people listening to us and say, well, these guys, these two just want war. If you choose not to use both aircraft carriers, the firepower, the missile defense, the coordination with Israel, you're not choosing no war. You're just postponing it. Sooner or later, for 47 years, they've been a problem. They've been calling us out and embarrassing us until this president took office. Nobody else has put this regime on its heels except him. And he's calling them out. Yesterday, they went through drills to try to intimidate us. They sent drones at our aircraft carriers to try to back us off. Nothing's worked. They know that they are no match for us. And as of now, they have no missile defense. And we have Israel on a war footing who has spent the last 6 months rearming. So this is the moment. I hate to tell you, they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt. They had 47 years to convince us that they wanted to live peacefully amongst us.
That's exactly right. President Trump, with Bibi Netanyahu in Israel, has gotten the Iran regime at its weakest point in its history. President Trump is very loath to use military force unless he knows that we have the extreme upper hand and the risk to us is low. And that is the situation where we have overwhelming force, have them completely surrounded with naval power, air power. And so we do have the great advantage combined with U.S. leadership under President Trump to squeeze the regime economically. And so they are very weak. The longer we wait at this point, Brian, to your point, the longer time the regime is going to have to rearm. You already see the Chinese communists trying to help the Iran regime get its missile program back to where it was before the Israelis significantly degraded it. And so it is now to the point where it is a moment of opportunity for President Trump to completely remake the Middle East. Israel is stronger than it has been. The Iran regime is weaker. I think it would be a major missed opportunity if we let this regime stay in power.
So we have Marco Rubio overseas, went to visit Hungary, and he's also obviously made a huge speech in Munich. I thought it was really effective. Love to get your take on that. And now we had him commenting on your Russia-Ukraine negotiations, still led by Jared Kushner and Witkoff, who are doing the same thing, not only with the rebuilding of Gaza, but also overseeing the negotiations with Iran. I think we could divide up teams. We have enough people. Here's Marco Rubio, Cut 48.
We don't know if the Russians are serious about ending the war. They say they are, and under what terms they were willing to do it, and whether we can find terms that are acceptable to Ukraine that Russia will always agree to. But we're going to continue to test it.
So, that we're out with these talks now, the big difference, they say, the Russian economy is faltering and its forces have been sustaining more losses for the first time than they've been able to replace over the last 2 months. They say the Kremlin also sees its window to reach an advantageous deal narrowing because the Trump administration could become distracted on the midterm elections because they think it could actually get worse for them. They want the whole Donbass region. And I don't blame Zelensky. He's like, no, you can't have it.
Right. Right. So a couple things that I've been watching this whole war, Brian, is what you want Ukraine to be able to strike blows against the Russians at a faster rate than the Russians are able to reconstitute and rebuild their forces. And you're right that we've gotten to that point now. This is a moment where Ukraine is doing so well. The Russians are not able to take territory. And so you want to bolster the Ukrainians at this point, and you can do it a couple different ways. You've got European Europeans that are supplying weapons to Ukraine. They're buying American weapons. And you have a moment of opportunity where the United States can turn the screws on the Russian economy. And that's what you want to do to be able to slow the war machine, because Russia's not going to stop unless the costs are put on Russia. You cannot put pain on the Ukrainians. They're already suffering. They're the ones that are defending their country. And, you know, to your point about the Donbass, the Russians have been unable to take it by force. And so it would be criminal for Ukraine to be forced to give up this area that Russia has not been able to take by force. And Ukraine needs it to be able to stave off the Russians from further advancing.
So we found out, Elon Musk found out, the Russians were using Starlink to their advantage to find out the location of Ukrainian forces. And since they've been cut off, what's the effect been in the field?
So huge kudos to Elon Musk. He's been quiet about, what he does with Starlink, but the Russians were able to use Starlink, even though Starlink was there for the Ukrainians. But of course, Russia is in Ukrainian territory. They were able to use it. So Starlink is the bread and butter on the battlefield. And so it's greatly helpful to Ukraine, especially now as it has the battlefield momentum, for us to be able to cut that off for the Russians. So, great on Elon Musk. The more the United States continues to help train Ukrainians, help provide intelligence, reconnaissance, surveillance to allied forces who are helping Ukraine, the more we can help the Ukrainians, again, compel the Russians to actually negotiate in faith. The Russians have not changed their ultimate objectives. They don't just want the Donbass, Brian. They want all of Ukraine because they want to break the NATO alliance and push the United States out.
And you realize if you think that's not our problem, the second biggest army in Europe is the Ukrainian army. The biggest is the Russian army. So you want to take the most effective pound-for-pound fighting force in Europe and let them be absorbed by your sworn blood enemy, Russia? Please, people should think about it. I think Europe understands it. Do you think they're getting the message that Rubio relayed, that it's essentially you guys got to bolster up your military, defend yourselves, take control of your borders, take control of immigration, because we want a ally that's going to be effective and strong? Do you think they got that message this time?
Well, I think so. I thought that Secretary Rubio's speech was statesmanlike. It was amazing. It was timely, in part because he has this ability to give the Europeans tough medicine, but in a way that brings them in with us. We want you on our side. We need the collective advantages of your military, your economies, to be able to hold off the Russians, because we don't just have the Russians to deal with. We have the Chinese, the Russians, the North Koreans, and the Iranians. And so we need the collective West to get serious and confident about defending ourselves. And so I think I've now seen that the Germans have been more serious than I've ever seen them in my career. Serious about rearming, the French, the Brits. And so it's going to still take some time. They've got very difficult, domestic politics, just like we do. But I think, Secretary Rubio was just a great orator. And I hope that it mobilizes them.
I hope so, too, because here's the thing. If I'm a politician in Europe and I'm leading a country, I can honestly say, guys, it's not my opinion that we need to take care of our own security. America told us we have to. So then I now have a built-in excuse that any leader in UK and France and Germany has to understand that they got to build up their own defense. That helps you domestically. Then people understand it. Why do we have to worry about it? America's got it. That's why we're in NATO. And now America's saying, you guys got to pick it up, because this is your problem and we're willing to help but not do everything. And I think that helps them. The other thing is Europe wants to win over China, and China wants to win over Europe. That's the big thing. They want to get under our skin. Well, do you think that China understands, if the Europeans have any street smarts, they turn around and say, if you want our business, stop Russia fighting in Ukraine, because if you stop buying their oil, that war ends tomorrow. Do you think Europe understands they have leverage there?
I think they do. You bring up a good point about the connection between China and Russia. I mean, over the last decade, especially, the Chinese and the Russians are increasingly collaborating. Yep. China wants Russia to succeed in Ukraine. And China would just carve up the Europeans as well. I mean, for the Europeans to say, look, the Americans are giving us tough medicine, maybe we should diversify and look to China. It's so foolish. They're the Chinese communists.
Of course.
What a country to empower. You do not want to empower the Chinese communists. They would treat your country terribly. And so I do think that the Europeans increasingly understand that their security security is tied to the United States prevailing over the Chinese communists in this long competition. And Secretary Rubio, I think, really brought them along in a way, at least, you know, laid it out for them in a way that I think nobody else could have done it as effectively, and really showed them what President Trump's vision is for American ascendancy and why that's good for them.
You happy where Venezuela is at this point?
I am. I'm obviously still kind of keeping track of what's going on there. You want Venezuela to eventually transition over to be self-governing, a democratic country. But I am satisfied, I think, with the Trump administration's realization that chaos and civil war is always the worst scenario. And so we still have a heavy hand on that transition government. We're pulling the Venezuelans out of the orbit of the Chinese, the Russians, and the Iranians, that axis of aggressors. And so I think that's a great thing. I would like to see us do the same thing. We started off our conversation talking about the Iran regime. The Iran regime is one of the greatest suppliers of oil to China. 80% of Iran's oil goes to China. And, of course, all of their weapons supplies goes to Russia. So these things are connected.
And just lastly, just go back to Iran. Is there anything part of the Venezuela plan that we could put into Iran? We don't want to run the country. We don't want people on the ground. But is there? Do you think there's anyone we can work with in Iran, perhaps clandestinely, we've identified that would be able to handle a transition?
Well, my suspicion, Brian, watching this play out over the last few weeks, because, you know, I wondered why the United States didn't carry out a military strike even, you know, a few weeks ago, whenever the protests were really kind of in full force. And I think that what is going on in part, while the Trump administration tries these negotiations with the Iranians, is they are looking for who would be a credible people, group, person to take power after the Ayatollah is overthrown, if we were to take that action. Because President Trump even hinted at that. A reporter asked President Trump, are you looking for a replacement regime? And he basically hinted and said, we're talking to people. President Trump understands that the worst thing we could do is topple this regime and leave it totally in civil war. There needs to be a government in place. So my hope is that the United States intelligence community with our State Department is working on that.
And the thing is, they've been incredibly competent. If you look what they did with the Houthis, you look how they supported Israel, you look at what happened with Venezuela, you see we take on missions that are well thought out and execute. I know we're an incredible run and things have come our way. I'm just very confident with this group, Rebecca. Thanks so much for your time and insight. Rebecca Heinrichs, thank you.
Always happy to do it. Thanks, Brian.
Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
The same would be true, let's say, here in Los Angeles around the homeless issue. I think morally, ethically speaking, it is an atrocity that in a country this wealthy, we have people just on the streets. And we should have we should insist on policies that recognize their full humanity, people who are houseless, and be able to provide them the help and resources that they need.
You could say homeless. It's not houseless. Shelter challenged. So what's significant about what Barack Obama just said? He's calling out Gavin Newsom and Zohran Mamdani. Same thing. You know, I'm not saying that he's endorsing Westmore, but the word is he's pushing Westmore. Westmore has a problem telling the truth and not exaggerating his past. Yeah, he went to the military, I think it was Annapolis or West Point, one of those. But the bottom line is his essays, his PhDs, all these things, what he did at Oxford, what he didn't do at Oxford, he's got huge problems. And if Obama wants that, go at it. But he also knows that Newsom and the homelessness, that's not okay. And where's Newsom over in Munich making ridiculous comments about dyslexia and defending himself against Ted Cruz's comments and going after President Trump and climate change? Don't forget to follow my YouTube page. I'll have highlights of today's shows and all the stuff I do. Just go to youtube.com/Brian Kilmeade Show. And of course, you can follow us on our website. Don't move.